I'm Digital Dave.
And I'm Afterburner Al for 15
know,
more minutes.
Every time we fix the sound barrier, they break it again. Yeah, come on, man.
Yeah, we send it back for testing or something.
Yeah.
And speaking of testing, from NASA, Mark Sandeen, a test pilot, welcome.
Yeah, good morning. Glad to be here.
And
everybody,
I guess
everybody thinks NASA's space.
Space, but no, it's
but no. You fly a lot lower.
Yeah,
it's aeronautics. Yeah, the aeronautics, yep. And there's so much in certainly the aeronautics realm that NASA has done. I mean, the Forerunner created the original data for the airfoil,
mm-hmm.
and all the testing, which a lot of airfoils are still kind of based off of. So that's something that you, as a NASA test pilot, certainly have to go out there and do the end, or at least try to suss out the theoretical that's going on.
Yes, and one in the more aeronautics realm, we do a lot of atmospheric science. I'm based out of Langley, Virginia, mm-hmm. and we traditionally have a lot of aeronautics, and we have giant wind tunnels there, which are very fascinating if you ever have a chance to even go see them. But our focus recently has been more on the atmospheric science side. So we are trying to develop better ideas of how clouds form and how weather works in both short-term and long-term forecasting, so we can just understand, you know, how the climate moves and what it does.
So you're telling me that part of your job is to fly in all the situations and ways that we're taught not to.
Well,
flying into icing, flying into clouds, flying into
storms. NOAA does a lot of that.
Right? Yeah, I was just saying NOAA is the hurricane.
Well, NOAA
is
the storms.
Yeah.
Yes.
Yeah.
So they go more directly at it, and we more try and get more at the long term science end. So one example is we have we just finished a long project where we had a King Air fly at about 28,000 feet, and then we have a Falcon jet, an old Coast Guard aircraft, fly low in the clouds. And that Falcon jet has all these in-situ instruments that suck in the air around it and kind of tell the humidity, temperature, all those parameters. And then you have the King Air fly overhead simultaneously with a laser radar and a polarimeter and spit down information and try and figure out all the different particles that are in that column. And then once you understand all the different particles that are in that column, you can kind of say, hey, why did this cloud form? Where did it come from? And so that's kind of an example of how we figure out what goes on in the atmosphere, and then scientists throughout the U.S. and different universities and the world take that information.
That's really fascinating that basically you're doing a compare and contrast flight.
You can say that. We're just collecting as much data as we
can.
Well,
yeah, each one has different sensor suite.
Yeah, and, mm-hmm. and one's in there and says, okay, this is what an aircraft is experiencing right now. And then the other is a look down to kind of analyze.
Hey, is it wet down there?
Yeah. How's it going? I think I got the better deal.
Yeah, exactly.
Well, you could argue from the test pilot perspective, would you rather be in the one that's kind of just chugging along, or would you rather be the one that's flying around the clouds and maneuvering around?
That's true.
So
that's
you guys
true.
Are a different breed, aren't you? Yeah. What are some of the other projects you've worked on?
Yeah, in the more aeronautics realm, I'm involved in the electrified powered flight demonstrator. So we're trying to work to reduce carbon emissions in aviation, get that single aisle passenger aircraft to utilize some of that cleaner electric power. So it's been a fascinating project
now,
for me.
You've got a couple different programs going on. Is this the new one where they're talking about the 20 megawatt generator and all the thrusters?
No, that's an X aircraft.
Okay.
And most of the X aircraft, right, because of their nature are sent out to California, where there's a lot of space, a lot of big air, you know, and flat land you can deal with. Whereas Langley's a little more congested, so we have less of those X-planes. And this project is using industry partners to develop electric aircraft and utilizing their expertise alongside NASA's to figure out how we can better, you know, put batteries on aircraft and help make that cleaner emissions a reality.
Well, being as you're a naval aviator, you like noise and smoke, though.
I do like noise and smoke. Sometimes I do miss the greater noise and smoke that occurs out in California.
Yeah. It's nothing like that. I don't get that afterburner kick from this little button-marked turbo.
Yeah, I don't have afterburners anymore. I had those in the Navy, but
yeah.
Right
and
now.
You mentioned the Navy. Talk just a little bit about kind of how you grew into the NASA role from where you came from.
Yeah, absolutely. So I went to ROTC at Cornell, and I studied engineering while I was there. And so that kind of set me on a good path where when I finished my ROTC time there, I joined the Navy as a prospective naval aviator, and went to Pensacola to start that whole training and get my wings of gold. And I was selected to fly Super Hornets, so F-18Es.
Oh,
and Fs.
That's nice.
Yeah.
That's tough duty. Yeah.
Yeah, it was pretty fascinating going out a few deployments out on the Lincoln CVN-72. And then I transitioned as a test pilot, not really transitioned, but just another step in the career. And I did test pilot school out in the UK, actually. Had an opportunity to go to Empire Test Pilot School.
He flew on the wrong side of the road there.
They do have their own unique rules in the air as well.
Yeah.
The Battle of Britain lives on in the sense that military aviation reigns a little more supreme in the UK. And it's a real legacy from them. It's fascinating. But anyway, so from that test pilot world, I eventually made my way to NASA after... And that gave me the background to be able to apply to this job.
On the aviation side of NASA's research, we've been doing this type of research for 70 years now. I mean, I don't know when they started, 1930s. Hasn't everything been invented yet? I mean, that's the mindset that the average person is probably wondering.
Well, that's one of the wonderful things about working at NASA is it's humbling, because every day I'm working with smart people who do things outside of their jobs that I'm like, I wish I had both the time and capacity to learn as much as you have. And it helps me to grow all the time to just see all the new boundaries that are out there, both personally and for our understanding of science aeronautically and in space.
Well, that's, you know, when you become a NASA employee, you grow excess brain capacity.
It's brain 2.0.
I wanted to ask you about test pilot school. Just could you describe a little bit, kind of, what's involved at that? I mean, I'm sure there's a lot of book work, but then going out, is there certain maneuvers that you learn as a test pilot? Because test pilot is just that. It's you're testing unknown stuff. Are there some basics and you kind of pivot off of that?
Yeah. So test pilot, the current culmination of test pilot school is designed to let you go out there, say the government wants to purchase a new aircraft and you're going to go out there for a week and fly it and evaluate all aspects of this, say, new fighter that the government's going to buy. And you're going to say, this is good, this is bad, this is good, this is bad, and I recommend we purchase it or recommend this, this, and that. And that's kind of the old school way that test pilot worked. So they're building up all these fundamentals to understand how the systems work, understand how the performance works. Is the aircraft going to turn quick enough inside a, you know, BFM to ACM engagements, and are the systems there to be able to navigate appropriately? There's a whole end-to-end understanding. And so test pilot school is building blocks in each of those areas to then allow you to do that overall evaluation. And in modern times, there's a lot more systems testing going on. So they've really modified the curriculums because we do so much with systems now. Aircraft is a flying, you know, body of systems to do the mission we need out there.
Yeah, so I think a lot of it now is because so much testing is done either in computers or sort of ground testing that can mimic the air. You don't have to go up. This is not Muroc Dry Lake Bed anymore in the late 40s.
It was in some ways.
Well, so much fly-by-wire stuff. He's not really the test pilot. The computer is.
Yeah.
He's just telling it what he wants it to do.
But it's still dangerous, though. It can still be dangerous.
Oh, the danger's still there,
Test pilot, it's kind of you're flying an unknown. It's a lot more known unknown. Sorry, I'm quoting Donald Rumsfeld.
Known
sort
unknown,
of.
Yeah. Just don't fly an airplane with the computer nicknamed Hal.
Right. What do you see? What are some future projects that you may be working on that you can reveal?
Well, long term, the EPFD project is expected to take a long time. So I do expect that to continue to take more and more of my time. We have some deployments planned out to the more airborne science. So hear more about the airborne science stuff after this. Another project that we will continue to work on is supporting rocket launches. So we go out there and they're studying things about the magnetosphere. And we simply have cameras in the windows, but we get high altitude where the cameras can see clearly and track kind of ions moving in the magnetosphere.
That's quite a camera.
It is. Well, they're actually, you can buy similar cameras. We just modify them slightly and point them in the right direction, and they're high up. So it's amazing what you can do with off-the-shelf stuff.
Yeah, with hackers.
So one last question, what are some of the things we're learning about the atmosphere now that we're running up to space so much, both civilian, NASA's a civilian agency, but sort of the government-backed versus the contractors that have been running up, and what are we learning about, going up and down from space? Do you know?
Well, I would say what we continue to learn is the massive complexity of the Earth, the human environment, and space. Mm-hmm. So as we continue to make steps, we continue to see how complicated things are and how we need to continue to learn about it and study it and how important it is.
And how ignorant we were back then during those missions, those first space missions.
Yeah. Mark, we really thank you for coming in today.
Yeah, thank you guys. It's been great.
Very good.
Mark Sandin is a test pilot with NASA and emphasizing the aeronautics
the
portion
a, the
of
first
it.
A the first NASA, A. The first A. Yes.
And don't ask him about the
second
S.
A. Yeah.
Just the A.
Sorry, I only work A.
You're listening to EAA Radio.